this common trait that we all have, wanting happiness, not suffering. And may that help me to overcome attachment and anger, apathy towards others, and instead to feel like I know something very intimate about them. And may that inform my compassionate motivation throughout the rest of the day. Physical in nature, the mind is formless, non-material. The mind can reflect and know objects. The body can't; it's inanimate. Okay. So the brain alone does not have consciousness, cannot know anything. Even if you have the eyes and the brain and everything there, like you do when there's a corpse. There's no consciousness, so there's no knowing or interaction with the rest of the world. So when the body and mind are related, which begins at the time of conception and ends at the time of death, then we call that life. But both the body and the mind have a continuum that exists before this life and that exists after this life. So before this life, the continuum of the body is material in nature. So we have the sperm and egg of our parents and all the food we ate. Yeah? And that's the cause of this body, the genetic thing that came. But then, every cell in our body has been renovated or redone or replaced every 7 years. And by what makes that happen? Well, all the food that we eat. Yeah? And so that's kind of the history of our present body. And our body continues on, Still, cells doing their thing. We eat more food and more oxygen. There comes a point where the body is no longer able to sustain consciousness, and there's death. And then after death, the body just gets recycled. It's atomic and molecular in nature. So the worms have a good lunch, or it gets cremated and pollute the air, or you do a green burial and it dissolves back into the soil. So there's it's just material in nature. Whereas the consciousness, is that part of us that cognizes, experiences, feels, knows, it's the whole part of us that enables us to be a living being because we perceive things. Okay? It's the part of us that thinks. So that too has to have a continuity and causes. And it also produces something in the future. So if we look at today's mind, down. It depends on yesterday's mind. And that depends on the day before's mind, and the day before, and the day before. Okay? So we may not be able to remember everything, but we know that there was consciousness in all those days. Like, you know, can you remember what you did September 2nd, 1999? Yeah. No. Yeah. But we know that there was consciousness at that time, and that we perceive things and so on. And we know that, you know, our mind now is a continuum of that mind. And so we can trace it back to the time when we're infants. And again, you know, most of us don't remember much from infancy. Yeah. But we know babies have consciousness. You know, they experience pain and pleasure, and they perceive things and know things. So we know we had consciousness then. Yeah. So what happened? When did that consciousness come? You know, was it just at the moment of birth? Yeah. Well, from a Buddhist viewpoint, we say, you know, you can just as you trace the continuity of this body back into the womb of our mother, then we, you know, there was a body then, and there was a mind that was affiliated with that body at that time. Now, granted, we, you know, didn't have a lot of cognitive abilities when we were in the womb, or really, you know, in our first few years. You know, we didn't know how to think properly, we didn't have language, so we've really developed, you know. When we came out of the womb, you know, slowly we could see and smell and taste. In the womb, there was just the mental consciousness and the tactile consciousness. But then you go back, and we define conception as the time when the sperm and the egg and the consciousness came together. When that actually happens, you know, it's really difficult to say. Is it before the ovum attaches to, you know, the line of the uterus? Is it after? What about, you know, in a, you know, test tube baby, you know, artificial insemination? What does it? So it's hard to actually pinpoint when that happens. But I think generally it's accepted that, you know, for the ovum to start to grow and multiply and have many cells, you know, that the consciousness has entered by that time. So we can trace the consciousness back, you know, but then where was it before that moment of conception? Yeah? Because everything that exists had to have a cause before it. So what was the cause of the mind that first entered into, you know, the present body that we have? Yeah. We know it's got to be something that is clarity and cognizance, because that's the nature of the mind. Yeah. I don't really think the stork brought it. Yeah? And I don't think it magically appeared because there was a body there, or, you know, just a sperm and egg. So the only thing we can really say is, well, there was a previous moment of clarity and cognizance before that consciousness, you know, entered into the ovum, you know, the fertilized egg. So that's previous life, isn't it? You know, before this life, there was consciousness, and that consciousness, too, had a cause, a previous moment, and it had a cause, previous moment. And it just continues back. And so in Buddhism we say there was no first moment of consciousness, no first moment of sentient beings. Okay, that there's always a preceding moment. So there's no notion of a creator that created us. It's just one moment of consciousness producing the next moment. Yeah. And it's beginningless. So some people, the idea of infinity or beginninglessness, it makes them uncomfortable. It's like, there's got to be a beginning. You know, okay, well, this table, yes, there's got to be a beginning. We can see somebody made it. But all the atoms and molecules that constitute this table, you know, you can trace them back to the Big Bang. You know, there was some continuity of something going back to the Big Bang. But also, the Big Bang didn't come out of nothing. There was something, you know, material in nature that existed before it. You know, so some kind of continuity there. So just as there's a continuity of material things, then there's a continuity of consciousness. Yeah. So if the idea of beginninglessness makes you uncomfortable, think of math class. Yeah? Remember math class? And you could, you know, if you're standing at zero, there's minus one, minus two, minus three, minus four. Is there any beginning that direction? If you go in the positive numbers, one, two, three, four, is there ever any end in that direction? No. Yeah, does that make sense to you? Do you feel comfortable with that? Yeah. So it's the same kind of thing, you know. So if somebody, you know, if you go to your math teacher and say, there's got to be a beginning to the negative numbers and there's got to be an end to the positive numbers, what's your math teacher going to say? Well, you can believe that if you want, but good luck trying to find it. Yeah? So it's the same kind of thing, yeah? And so we just have this, you know, beginninglessness and endlessness of consciousness. Yeah? So even after we die, you know, death is merely the body and mind separating. That's all it is, you know, the body and mind separating. The body gets recycled, the mind goes on. One moment of clarity and cognizance producing the next moment, the next moment, the next moment. Okay. As long as we are sentient beings, or I should say maybe ordinary beings who are afflicted by ignorance and clinging attachment and anger, as long as those mental factors obscure our mind, then we create polluted actions. Our actions are polluted by those disturbing emotions and all the other disturbing emotions that branch out of them. Yeah, like resentment and belligerence and, you know, craving and everything else, okay? So as long as we have that, that fundamental ignorance that misapprehend how things exist, then we also have these afflicted mental states. And we create actions. Yeah? So some of our actions are virtuous and some are non-virtuous. Okay? So the ignorance itself is neither virtuous nor non-virtuous. But out of it can come virtue or non-virtue. So for example, if out of ignorance there comes anger, yeah, and then we act on our anger, then, you know, we harm people physically, we harm people verbally, we think negative thoughts about them. Those negative kind of actions, yeah, of body, speech, and mind, then will create, you know, karma. Karma is simply that action. The action leaves some kind of imprint or seed on our mind stream that will influence where we get reborn in the next life and what happens to us in the next life and all sorts of things. Yeah. Similarly, we can have that fundamental ignorance, yeah, that misunderstands reality, but we can still have virtuous thoughts, yeah? And so we can be kind to others and so on. The virtue isn't totally unpolluted because it still rests on ignorance, but that virtue can bring happy results in the future. So the non-virtuous actions bring undesirable or painful results. The virtuous actions bring good ones, you know? So this is all occurring within what we call samsara, or cyclic existence, the cycle of rebirth that goes around by the force of ignorance. Yeah. So what we're trying to do in Buddhism, our ultimate goal is becoming a Buddha. Yeah. A Buddha being somebody that's no longer trapped in this cycle, plus somebody who has, you know, equal compassion for all living beings and is not hindered by their own obscurations to being, from their side, from being a benefit to others. And then that Buddha, you know, manifesting and really leading sentient beings in a good direction. Yeah. So that's kind of our ultimate goal. Yeah. Something before that is just to have a good rebirth. Okay? Because although they say we can attain awakening in one life, it's kind of hard to do. Okay? So it's likely to take us a few lifetimes. Yeah? And so we need to create the causes to have good rebirths in those upcoming lifetimes so that we meet the Dharma and continue to practice the path. Okay? And so here's why we abandon non-virtuous actions and create virtuous actions, because they'll have us, help us have that good rebirth. And also, the more we can create virtue, the more positive energy, positive seeds we put in our mind stream, and that makes it easier to understand the Dharma. Whereas when we act out of non-virtue, then our minds just get totally confused and we can't understand the Dharma very well. We can see this very readily, can't you? When you're angry, you know, can you understand much at all? You know, even you talk to psychologists, they say there's a period, you know, when we get really angry called the refractory period. And at that time, we can't take in any information that doesn't agree with what we already think. So in your experience, when you're angry, can you take in any information that disagrees with your opinion? You know, so even you're angry at somebody who you love dearly, if they try and explain how the situation appears to them, we can't hear it. And similarly, when they're angry, we could try and explain to them what we say. It doesn't make any difference. So that's why it's always good, if things get heated, to create some space, let everybody calm down. Yeah? And then start thinking on our own side, okay, what is important to me? What is the real issue for me? You know, what am I feeling? What am I needing? And then thinking about the other person. What is the other person's concern in this situation? Yeah, what are they feeling? What are they needing? So remember I was talking the other day about my parents and me, you know, I was arguing for autonomy and they were arguing for safety and we were like this, totally missing each other. You know, if we can stop at that time and go, okay, what's the issue for the other person? Yeah? What is it really that they're wanting? And what is it they're feeling right now? And really, what am I wanting? Yeah? Because it's very interesting. When you quarrel with a very, very dear friend or relative, somebody that you really cherish in your life, when as hell with them. What is it that you're really wanting in your heart?
Connection.
Isn't it? When you're really mad, isn't that what you're wanting most? What the other person is connection, and you're not having that connection. But when we're angry, do our actions create connection? No. Our actions produce the opposite of what we're really wanting. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So that's why sometimes I think we're really stupid. Yeah. And we have to acknowledge it. We're really dumb sometimes. We work at cross purposes to what is really important to us and what we really want. You know? It's like, there's my dear one, and I'm furious. So I call them all sorts of names. I exaggerate everything they've ever done that I haven't liked. I pull out my whole list of grudges that I've been gathering and saving for when we have a big fight. And I dump it all on them. And what I'm really wanting is a hug. What I'm really wanting is to connect with them. Yeah. But I'm acting in the total opposite way. So this is why we say the afflictions cause us misery. Yeah? Because we can see right away, you know, even we're not talking about future lives, right away, we can see the disadvantage. And then if we talk about karma, you know, when we're angry, yeah, what do you say when you're angry? Do you say the truth when you're angry, or is there a little bit of exaggeration in there? Or maybe is there lying? I don't know about you, but when I'm angry, everything gets exaggerated, you know? And it's not just, you know, you didn't pay attention to me today. It's, you never pay attention to me. Yeah? And it's not just, you know, you're in a bad mood today. You're always in a bad mood, and you always take it out on me. Yeah. So actually, I'm lying. Yeah? And I'm accusing them of things that they don't do. So that's leaving imprints on my own mind. Sometime I might even get so mad, you know, that I throw something. Or I walk out of the room and I slam the door. And then I withdraw and I go to my room and I become cold ice. I will not talk to that other person. Yeah. Do you ever get like that? You know? And what are you wanting most of all? Connection. So maybe the other person comes in, you know, you slam the door, you walk out, you're not talking to them. And they come in and they say, you're upset. And you go, I'm not upset. Leave me alone. And they try and say, can we talk about it? No, there's nothing to say. And then at the time of death, according to which karmic seed gets fertilized and ripens, that makes us attracted to one kind of body or another kind of body. Yeah? And then when we're born in another rebirth, what we experience is influenced by, you know, it could be either the positive or the negative karma that we've created in previous lives. Yeah? So each lifetime, you know, as a human being anyway, we have both virtuous and non-virtuous karma ripening. Yeah? So first of all, we have, yeah, a lot of virtuous karma ripening simply because we have a human rebirth with human intelligence. You know, to create the cause for this kind of body with, you know, the human intelligence, we created a lot of virtue in the past and kept very good ethical discipline. Yeah. If we didn't, we could have been born as a tick. Yeah. So the tick is here at the Abbey, very close to the Dharma. Cannot learn anything. Or maybe you get born as an Abbey cat. And you get fussed over and pampered and held and petted. Yeah. And we bring all our cats in on Thursday and Friday night when we have teachings. And we make sure they're all there to hear the teachings so they get some good imprint on their mind. Do they understand any of it? Yeah. We try and tell them, yeah, when they go out walking, which is why we keep them on leashes, don't chase the voles and the mice. They want to live just like you do. Yeah? And our cats who we love so much just look at us. What are you talking about? Yeah? So the fact that we have a body and a brain such that we can have human intelligence, so that we can think about worthwhile things, it's a very wonderful result. And so the cause for that was something very virtuous. Yeah? So don't ever get down on yourself and say, I can't do anything right. Because whoever you were in a previous life, over many lifetimes, because it takes a while to create the karma for this kind of rebirth, whoever you were in previous life did a really good job. Yeah. And that's why we have this rebirth. And I think you people especially, the fact that you're meeting the Dharma when you're young, you know, what Edith and Sonia were talking about yesterday. Yeah. Meeting the Dharma when you're young, again, especially fortunate. Because your mind is much more flexible when you're young. You also, hopefully, will have more time in the future to practice Dharma with this precious human life and create more virtue and gain, you know, understanding and realizations. So especially fortunate. Yeah. We have many people who come here who don't meet the Dharma until they're in their 50s and 60s. We have one woman who comes, Vida. Vida, how old is Vida? She must be 80-something.
Early 80s, I think.
Yeah? And she and her husband, they were in their 70s when they met the Dharma. And they both were just like, wow. And then her husband got cancer. He died like 2-3 years later. But in those 2-3 years, he did all he could, you know, to understand the Dharma. She's living longer. And, you know, is able to do more. But still they would say, oh, if I only could have met this when I was younger. Yeah, instead of spending how many years chasing after money and fame and, you know, helping our friends and harming our enemies. And, you know, they said, if I could have met Dharma and started practicing when I was young. And Ken, you know, we have another man, he's a doctor, and he just turned 68, and he didn't meet the Dharma until a few years ago, too. It's like, oh my goodness, if I could have met that, understood it when I was younger. Yeah, so you people are especially fortunate that way. And then you have food. Yeah, anybody here starving? Okay, so that, you know, just as having the human body create indicates we kept good ethical conduct in previous lives, we abandoned negativity and created virtue, having food now indicates that we were generous in a previous life, and we shared our belongings, and we shared food with others, and so on, so it comes back to us. We also have problems this life. Whenever we have a problem, it indicates we created some non-virtue in a previous life. But when you really look at it, in your life, do you have more happiness or more suffering? When you really look, yeah? I mean, you've all had an opportunity to have an education. We take that so much for granted, don't we? But imagine being born in a place where you don't have education. Imagine being born as a woman who gets married off when you're 11 or 12 years old. And your whole life, no education. Or a man who's just herding the cattle all day. I mean, it's something we are so fortunate to have had. Yeah? And very easily we could have been born in a different situation. Yeah? Very easily. Yeah. And probably our ancestors were. My grandmother was illiterate. She came to this country, she learned to talk, she never learned to read and write. Okay? So we look, and overall, you know, do we have more happiness or more suffering? We're incredibly fortunate. Incredibly fortunate. Yeah? So, yes, we have problems, but we also have the tools to deal with our problems, especially if we've met the Dharma, you know, because the Dharma is going to help us to deal mentally with the problems we face, to transform our mind so we don't have to suffer in the moment. And the Dharma is also going to teach us what to practice and what to abandon so that we can create the causes for future happiness and abandon the causes for future suffering. Yeah. So don't ever put yourself down, because whoever you were in a previous life, you did something really good. And even in this life, you know, look at the opportunities that you have. Really quite amazing. So that's important to understand. And not let ourselves get distracted by the worldly glitter. Yeah. It's like, let's go to Hollywood and become famous. Yeah. Or whatever our thing is, you know, we don't all want to go to Hollywood and become famous. But we're attached to certain things. We cling to certain things. You know, we'll do anything in the world to get them, including harming others. Yeah. So when we think about karma, And that right now we're creating the causes for who we will be and what we will experience in the future. Now is the time we have power to control the future. When things are happening, when you break your leg, you can't unbreak it. You have to deal with it being broken. So when we have problems now, you can't make the problem vanish. We have to deal with it. And that's where the Dharma helps us deal with the problem right now. If we want to prevent the problem, the way to do it is beforehand through abandoning non-virtue and creating virtue. And that way, we don't create the causes for misery, and instead, we create a lot of causes for happiness. And so, we have the power now to create the kind of life that we want to have in the future. Yeah. So, instead of being distracted by... My teacher, Lama Yeshe, he always talked about chocolate. And so one of his books is called When the Chocolate Runs Out. Because he came to America, he had never had chocolate before, but he saw how we are fixated on chocolate. Everybody here like chocolate?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if it's not chocolate, it's pizza, okay? It's something that is like, you know? And Lama says, he uses chocolate as a metaphor for whatever it is we're attached to. It may not be chocolate, okay? It might be reputation. It might be popularity. It might be cars. It might be, you know, sports. It might be, you know, our physical appearance or our physical health. Or, you know, who knows? It could be lots of that. Chocolate is just the metaphor. But he says, what happens? You know, you're looking for chocolate your whole life. You're looking for whatever it is you're attached to that you think is going to make you happy your whole life. But what happens when it runs out? You know, you get what you want, and then it breaks. It runs out. It isn't like it was supposed to be. I had a friend in high school who so much wanted a Porsche. Yeah? All the time he just talked about, I want a Porsche, I want a Porsche, I want a Porsche. Yeah? And that's really what I heard all through high school from him, you know? Our families were friends, so I thought. And then, you know, of course, after, you know, he finished school and everything, he went to work, he got a Porsche. Ah, now I'm going to live happily ever after I have a Porsche. And the big shock was, it didn't bring him ultimate happiness. Yeah. You get your Porsche, and then what is it? Then you want something else. Plus, you get your Porsche. Now that you have a Porsche, you have Porsche hell. Yeah? What is Porsche hell? When your Porsche gets dented, when it gets scraped, when it gets bashed, when it breaks, when you have to take it to the shop, when you have the old model for Porsche and your friends have the new model. So the chocolate ran out on him. You know? So this is the thing, you know, to like, what are we really seeking in life that we think is going to make us ultimately happy? And is it actually something outside of ourselves? Or is it actually through training our mind and subduing our ignorance, anger, and attachment, and encouraging our love, compassion, and wisdom? What is it that's actually going to bring happiness? And then can you imagine? Like, all of a sudden, you're 67 like me, and you look in the mirror, and you see more wrinkles and more freckles than you ever thought you had, because you just had cataract surgery, because your eyes are going bad. And then you have aches, and you have pains. Yeah, and your body can't do what it used to be able to do. You used to be able to get up off the floor without your hands touching the floor, just through your legs. And now you have to push up a little bit from the floor to get off the floor. Okay? So, you know, how are we going to age? Are we going to be happy when we're old? Or are we going to be crabby and bitter and grumpy and complain? Yeah? What kind of old person are we going to be? Because we're creating the cause to be that kind of old person now according to what we familiarize our mind with right now. Yeah. And this is why I think athletes and movie stars have a really difficult life, because what they're getting, the fame and glamour and wealth that they're getting, is dependent entirely on their body when it's young and attractive. You can throw that basketball into the hoop when you're 20-something. It would be very interesting to have teams made up of 60 and 70 and 80-somethings. Yeah. The NBA for old people. Yeah? So if your self-esteem is based on your athletic ability, is your body getting more in shape or less in shape with each day that goes on? Yeah, your body's getting older, so you might get more in shape for a while, but eventually, what happens if your self-worth is based on how you look, like the movie stars? Yeah. Or the rubbish that they feed women about how we should look to be worthwhile. You have to look a certain way, and bottom line is you have to be sexy. It's rubbish. And yet, women buy into it. Men buy into the image of, you know, what you're supposed to look, the He-Man image that's put on magazines. All this is rubbish. It's not sustainable. If you buy into that, what kind of future are you creating for yourself? Because we are all getting older and uglier. Aren't we? With each day, you think, oh, I'm young. But each day, you're getting older. Yeah. These wrinkles didn't happen just in one day. They came about over a period of time. And you don't notice it until after you have cataracts. Yeah. Well, you kind of notice some of them before the surgery, but they're really clear afterwards. And if you base your self-esteem and your happiness on your physical appearance and your physical strength, you're setting yourself up for a lot of misery in the future. Yeah. So when I was talking with Sonia, yeah, the lady that was in our group, she was telling me about how aging is difficult for her, because she can't do what she used to be able to do. And she's very afraid of being useless and very afraid of other people having to take care of her. Yeah. And I said to her, you know, useful and useless is only your state of mind. Yeah. With age comes a lot of wisdom, believe it or not. I know you think people who are older are dumb, but really, age brings some wisdom if you're smart. If you're like Trump, you keep doing the same stupid things over. But, you know, with some people, they learn from their mistakes. Sorry, I make a cartoon character out of him. It's not, you know, who I think he really is. But definitely, you see that. Yeah. I mean, a man having his... Anyway, we won't go into that. But, you know, if we set ourselves up for that, you know, that's what's going to happen. So I told Sonia, you have more wisdom now than you did when you were younger. And you can go out, and you've retired now, go out and do some volunteer work. Because let me tell you, if you can connect with even one child in a way that no other... and show that child support, and that child's never had even one other adult encourage them like you do, you can transform that child's life. Yeah, because we all know, either from our own experience or from looking at others, that a lot of kids don't get the support they need. Yeah, and sometimes they have just one adult that believes in them, and it can transform their whole life. And you can be that adult when you're old. Yeah. That one person that believes in that child and encourages them and looks after them and follows them. And you can do that even if you can't get out of your wheelchair. You know? You can still be useful. You can still practice the Dharma. It doesn't matter what your body's doing. Yeah. As long as you have your mental capacities, you can still practice the Dharma. Even if you lose your mental capacities and we become senile or get to Alzheimer's, if we've habituated our mind with kindness while we were young, then that's the kind of mental habits that become when we're old. And I told Sonia, you know, we have to learn how to age gracefully. And other people do want to help us. And part of being generous is giving other people the opportunity to express their care and affection for us by helping us. Because we often come in a society where we think that, you know, you got to take care of yourself, and if we can't take care of ourselves, we're just a burden on everybody. But there's actually people that want to help other people in this planet. Yeah? And so if we refuse their help, they're trying to express a good heart, and we're not letting them do that. So, you know, when you're an elder person, let somebody help you. Let somebody get to know you. It enriches them to be able to do that. Yeah. So our usefulness as a human being does not just depend on being good-looking and attractive and athletic and all of this. Really depends on what's going on in here. And that's why it's important to develop what's going on in here and not get distracted, yeah, by all the glittering chocolate outside. So maybe you have some comments or questions.
So I say, I am going to be compassion with these kids, and I'm going to eat everything that is given me to me. So I started eating meat again, because people is what they usually give me, meat. I say, okay, I will eat that. And sometimes I didn't want it, like spicy food. I don't eat spicy food. And sometimes I was almost crying and eating the food, because I said, no, I have the option to eat this food. Let's eat it, because these other kids, they don't have anything from where to choose if they like it or not. So I was thinking that I was being compassion, not to be picky what to eat, but maybe no.
Okay.
Maybe I'm just wrong about that.
Yeah. Okay. So I think you had a good intention there. The thing is, we also have to be practical, and our body functions better with some food and functions worse with other food. I think in terms of eating meat, if you can be a vegetarian, it's good because it saves many other lives. So that's an action of compassion for all the animals. Yeah. And then, I know what you mean about spicy food. Sometimes I feel like a dragon, you know. So, and my body, you know, if I eat too much grain, it doesn't function well. It functions better if I eat vegetables and fruit. So I know if I have a choice, let's take care of this body so that it functions well, so I can use it to practice the Dharma. But when I don't have a choice, I'm going to eat whatever there is and I'm not going to complain. So some days, you know, out there, they cook what I don't like. Yeah, my digestive system can't have beans. You know, I can, rice, too much rice, I don't, my stomach doesn't get it. But some days, what's there? Rice and beans. Yeah, and salad. So, you know, I take a little bit of rice, and then, you know, there's some vegetable, I take that, and then I have a big salad. And I don't go to the cook and, oh, why did you create rice and beans? Yeah, because I just say, this is my practice, you know, to be content with what I'm offered. Yeah, and it is my practice. And some days, you know, usually they create, they have something, if they have spicy food, usually they have something that isn't so spicy. But some people like spicy food. I like half and half, so sometimes. But sometimes all the spicy stuff is gone. Yeah? Like today's Wednesday, so today I am the last one in the food line. Yeah, because the lay people go first on Wednesdays. What's left? Rice and beans. Okay, this is my Dharma practice, you know. So I have peanut butter and banana sandwich. That's great. That's fine. And like I say, there's usually other stuff too. So you eat, you know, what makes your body function well. But when you don't have a choice, you eat what there is, without complaining.
There was this friend that I had. She was talking to me that she didn't necessarily know how to pinpoint. Because, you know, in today's society, it feels like just right to label everything. So she was like, I'm not a vegetarian, but I'm also not, well, she's like, I'm not a vegan, but I'm also not vegetarian. It's like, I'll eat cheese and I'll eat meat when it's offered, but like, I mean, I eat meat if it's there, and kind of like the same situation you were saying. And then I told her, well, you really have to make a name for it. You could call it the Buddha diet, because I know Buddha, he'll accept whatever's been offered to him. And she goes like, oh, you know what, that is kind of like what it is, it's the Buddha diet. And I think that's like the way that she sees it now. So she doesn't have a strict diet, she just calls it the Buddha diet.
Yeah.
She'll accept anything that's been offered.
So, you know, within Buddhism, there's different takes. The thing of accepting whatever you're given, that's really practiced in Southeast Asia, especially when you go on Pindapat. With your alms bowl, whatever they give you, you say thank you very much. because that's part of your training. You don't go, somebody's giving you food, and you, I don't like that one, give me this one. You know, that's not too cool. Okay, but like in Chinese temples, where compassion is a basic practice, then they're deliberately vegetarian because of not, you know, wanting to harm the animals by eating them. Yeah. The Tibetans, you know, they have their own thing. Yeah. Well, it's good if you can be a vegetarian, but, you know, in Tibet there wasn't a lot else to eat but meat and sampa, barley flour and butter and stuff like that. So they ate that. Now they're in India, there's a whole lot of other stuff they can eat, but it's hard for them to change their diet. Yeah, but, you know, slowly, if you can do that. Yeah, so it's good, you know, maybe your friend is accepting herself more, then maybe slowly, you know, kind of, it's not a requirement to be vegetarian, but can do it. His Holiness says he's a part-time vegetarian. That's maybe what your friend could
call. Yeah,
part. She says part-time because his doctor told him sometimes he has to eat meat. Yeah, but of course in India the food is not as, you know, nutritious as here, and people have different bodies, so you know, we have to do what we. That answer your question?
Yes, yes,
it does. Also, I should say, eating meat is growing cows for consumption is very bad for the environment. It produces incredible amount of methane gas that, you know, goes into the atmosphere. It's really bad.
I had a question, but it's more, it has to do with karma. I talked to Nirmal Mansal about it, and she said it would be a good idea to bring it up to you. So if we don't have time for it today, you can let me know. But it was about, I was thinking, you know, because we learned that there's many, many Buddhas, and they're out there, if you have the right karma, they'll help you. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, if that's the case, wouldn't they try to influence the right person that could then influence the right person that could then influence, say, in our situation, Trump, to be like a better person so we can cultivate more compassion and you know, just be better? Because the way things are going right now, I mean, it's so terrible. Like, we've talked about all the terrible things going on. And so sometimes I just think, like, why won't the Buddha come and help? You know, like, we need it.
Well, the Buddha's trying to come and help, yeah? But it's like sometimes we are so rigid we can't hear anything, yeah? And we can see that in our own minds. Sometimes people, you know, like I was saying that sometimes you see that your parents get smarter as they age. You know, sometimes we look at the advice our parents gave us when we were young and it was like, they didn't have any clue what they're talking about. And you get older and it's like, oh, well, yeah, they did know something. Yeah, but at that time, we couldn't hear anything. So some people go through their whole lives, they can't hear anything. Yeah, I mean, the Buddha could go visit the White House and Trump couldn't hear it, probably, yeah. So things have to go, like when His Holiness Dalai Lama went, when was it, maybe last, no, not last year, 2 years ago, and he addressed the Senate, and I'm going, just for like 15 minutes, and I'm going, you know, what's his name, Cruz, what's the first name?
Ted
Cruz, heard the Dalai Lama, it's like, this is revolutionary. Yeah, just for somebody like Ted Cruz, yeah, to listen to His Holiness's methods of compassion. So Ted Cruz is not going to change instantaneously. I'm sure he's still voting to separate kids from their parents, you know, when they come to the border to immigrate. You know, I'm sure he's still voting against DACA, although his own relatives, you know, if they had come later, would have fallen in it. But at least there was some seed that was planted. And it may not ripen now, it might ripen later. But there was some seed that was planted. Yeah? So there's very much this idea that, of course, we want change to happen immediately, but big change, especially changing people's minds, it takes a lot of time. Yeah? And so we talk about planting seeds. And so, and we can see in our own lives, we will hear many teachings, but at the time we hear them, we can't always understand them. But as time goes on, it's like, oh, that's what that meant. Yeah? And so things can influence us in a subtle way, but that seed only ripens later on. Okay? So I know, like with Lama Yeshe, you know, one of my teachers, he's one of my first teachers, he and Zopa Rinpoche. I love Lama, but I can truthfully say that I didn't really begin to understand most of what he taught us until years after he died. Yeah? And then it was like, oh, maybe that's what he meant. Yeah? But at the time, well, it's part of having an obscured mind and a part of having a mind, you know, where ignorance, anger, and attachment are prominent. And then, you know, the karmic seeds that obscure the mind from previous negativities. Because I can also say my own experience. When I first started hearing teachings, I heard one thing. And then I did some purification, you know. There's the Vajrasattva Purification Retreat. It's a 3-month retreat we're having it here at the Abbey in the winter. But it's a 3-month retreat, and you do very strong purification. And after that, I went back to hear teachings from my teachers, and it was like, oh my goodness, gee, I never realized this before. And they were saying many of the same things, but my understanding and what it meant to me was completely different. Yeah, because of the change in me. Okay, so that's why we do purification practices. It's like you can send out the radio signal, but if you have a really awful radio, yeah, it's not going to come across so clear. And maybe you won't get it at all. But the better, the more you can improve the quality of the radio, the better, you know, the better reception you're going to get, and what you hear is going to be totally different. Yeah? So it's the same kind of thing with purifying our mind. As we purify, and as we create virtue, you know, what we can take in and our level of understanding changes.
In Buddhism, do they ever talk about, like, because I also have heard about, like, being in certain ages of time, like the Bronze Age, I can't remember what the different ones are, but it's, yeah, like different levels of enlightenment for people.
Not so much levels of enlightenment. They'll talk about an age where Buddhism, where the Dharma is declining, things like that. So there's, you know, ages like that. But that's referring kind of to a general thing in society. But they also say that in an age where the Dharma's declining, any virtue we create is heavier karmically than it doing the same kind of virtuous action at the time of the Buddha. Yeah, because from the time when the Buddha was alive, much easier to create that kind of virtue. Now, to create that kind of virtue, much more difficult. So it's heavier, it makes a stronger impact on the mind.
So would you say right now it's not declining, right? It's increasing? But
they say now is an area, a time of decline.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. But I say, because it's a time of decline, that means we have to practice more. Yeah? And that means, you know, we have to really take the opportunity we have right now. Other people say, oh, it's the time of decline. Let's get depressed. That's useless. That's useless. Depression is totally useless. Yeah, who cares if it's a kind of time of decline? The important thing is, what do I do now? It's like the guys I work with who are incarcerated. If they say, there's one guy, you know, he's in prison for life. No way are they going to get, you know, I write to him a lot. No way is this guy going to get out. Yeah? He murdered his mother and his stepfather. You know, they're not going to, he's lucky he didn't get the death penalty. No way they're going to let him out. He is such a good Dharma practitioner. It's amazing. You know? Other guys get a life sentence, they say, my life is useless, you know. And like, you know, they get drugs in prison. Oh, I'm just going to take drugs and space out. Yeah. You know, Al said, no, I'm going to make my life meaningful. And he's an excellent practitioner. And he's really turned his life around. So much so that he was at one prison. And he became the clerk in the chapel, which is a really good job. Yeah, because you get to, people are nice when they go in the chapel, you know. And prison, you're not always near people who are nice when they're somewhere. Yeah, but his behavior so much influenced the chaplain that when the chaplain got transferred to another prison, he asked that Al come and be his clerk there. That's amazing! You know, a guy who murdered his mother and stepfather, and the chaplain trusts him that much that now the chaplain is on a holiday and Al runs, you know, keeps the chapel open for other people to come. So he didn't say, oh, my life isn't shattered and this is a Dharma ending age and so let's give up. He really took the ball and ran with it. So that's my philosophy too. When you have the ball, run. Yeah? And we always have the ball. We always have the ball to run with.
I guess sometimes I feel hopeless because I read an article a little while back that talked about how there's some actual dead zones in the earth. Like, it's so heavily polluted that they're just so unfertile, and the levels of fertile ground are decreasing, and you know, just so much going on with climate change. And I was like, is there even going to be people left in the world to practice Dharma to like make that change? Yeah. You know, so is that just silly? Would that just be like the same thing as thinking about when we began, kind of like,
yeah,
just not something that's,
yeah,
worth,
I mean,
our time
we want to help the environment on this planet to keep life alive here as much as possible, but this isn't the only planet where there's life. And if you create, I mean, there's huge number of world places in the universe. And if you create the karma, you can get born in one of those other places and continue practicing. Okay? So we do our best to preserve this planet for the beings who are born here. But it isn't like it's the only place to be born. You know, we can create virtuous karma and be born in another place.
So, because they say that you need to have precious human life so you can practice the Dharma, but not necessarily. There's beings that practice the Dharma?
There's other human beings.
Oh, there's other human beings?
Beings, yes.
Oh.
So the human realm, it's a realm. I don't know that everybody looks like us, but they're human beings with that same kind of mentality and ability. Yeah?
It's too much Star Wars and Star Trek. You start thinking, if you don't look like me, you're not human, right?
Yeah.
You can't be human if you don't look exactly like this.
Right.
Okay.
And there's other universes with life on them.
Yeah. Huh? I think with, and that's the thing, it's like, how could you think that we're the only planet with human beings if, like, the universe is said to go on limitlessly? You know, it's just so, that's just ego talk right there.
Like, isn't
we're
it?
We're the only planet.
Yeah, you know? We're just this tiny dot. Yeah?
So, that's interesting. Well, good. That makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, this Earth just blows up. I mean,
if you have the karma, I mean, we'll all get born somewhere else. Yeah. So, but even if this world continues, if we don't create the cause for a good rebirth, we're not going to have one here or anywhere else. You know, and even if we do create the cause for a good rebirth, even if this planet isn't here, we will still have a good rebirth. Maybe a better rebirth. Tomorrow,
okay.
We can do that.
Okay.
And I mean, you guys are really interested and enthusiastic. And so, I mean, this is only 1 week, but you know, try and come back to the Abbey, you know, either for a retreat or come regularly or listen online or read books. Or, yeah. But it's amazing to see you all, like, kind of. Really, yeah, very nice to see this kind of enthusiasm. Okay, so let's dedicate. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born.